Hello and welcome to the very first episode of the Who's in Charge podcast. Sit back, relax, and let us take you on an access all areas journey through our beloved English football teams. But stick around for today's episode where I, Mason Gear, will discuss Sheffield United with a very special guest. Hello and welcome to the Who's in Charge podcast. For today's episode on Sheffield United, I am your host, Mason Gear, joined today by my good friend, Jack Lucas. Jack, thank you for being here today.
No worries, mate. Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. Also joining me today is my special guest, Ben Humphreys, or perhaps better known as Travelling Blade. Ben, it's an absolute pleasure having you here today, so thank you for taking part in today's episode.
Evening, lads. Thanks for having us.
You're more than welcome. Despite the result last weekend, did you have a good trip down to Brentford?
It was all right. The weather was okay. Paid £7.50 for a pint, which was fun. But as is the modern world. But yeah, it was all right. The stewards were quite thorough in their searches, like full on rifling through your change and all that kind of thing. So it was first time I've had that at a venue. So yeah, that was novel, but pretty nice new ground, nice weather at least, but just pretty boring routine loss. I was just trying to mention.
Did you take the train down, or did you get the fan coach, or how did that work?
Yeah, minibus down with the Donny Blades.
So, right.
Like 3.5 hours or so drive there and back. So
it's not ideal.
Not ideal at all.
But Ben, for those listeners that perhaps don't know you, can you just give them an insight into your life, you know, your YouTube channel, how long you've been doing it, why you took to YouTube in the first place?
Yeah, so I run the Travelling Blade YouTube channel. I started back in February 2018. So essentially what I do is I just I do match day vlogs, just take my phone, do a bit of a preview before, depending if it's home or away, depends who I'm with. Try and get some like fan previews of the game, get some fans come on if people want to do that. And then film the game, to be fair, film the highlights of the game. The main purpose I started doing it is I know there's a couple of goals that I think namely Stefan Skugel's goal at Wembley, and there's a few other United goals I'm thinking I really just wish there'd been fan footage of that. Just, you know, not necessarily like filming themselves, but just getting that moment of all the balls into Skugel, it's in the net, pandemonium. And there was a few other goals that were just, I thought, we aren't getting these captured on camera. And I thought, may as well do it myself. And I think, you know, at the time, I was like quite big fans of that, the Sidemen and all that. And there was also Show and View, who still go and doing the vlogs on for Chef U as well. So there was sort of a few inspirations. And I fancied getting into YouTube myself. And I thought, maybe try this, you know, and just, I'm already going to the games. I already had like a basic YouTube account, as most people will do. I've already got the phone that's good enough. So I basically had everything set to go. It was just me actually doing it. And I thought, I'll try and get the highlights and try and film myself a bit, you know, put a bit of myself on and that kind of thing. And it sort of did better than I expected, to be fair. And I think at its height was sort of probably just before COVID, to be fair. Pretty much like Chef U, similar at the height of our powers then. And I've had a couple of hiatuses since. Obviously, during COVID, I was doing no games, as no one was. And I think also last season, I didn't start vlogging until Man City in the FA Cup. I think after that, I think I just got a bit like tired of it all, to be fair. And I sort of just thought, I can't really be bothered. But I sort of got back into it. And this season's been good, been a bit of a mixed bag. Some games, some vlogs have been better than others, depending on, you know, a lot of it depends on the result and the fan base. But yeah, no, so I've been going since 6 years. Just do like the match day vlogs and try and get the atmosphere and mainly try and get the goals on footage.
Definitely. No, I think I mentioned to you the other day that I've been watching you for 5 years or so now, because as I said, I'm from down south, so I haven't always been able to make it to the games. So yeah. I've been having to live these games through your experience, and it's been brilliant. And I always look forward to watching your games. Your vlogs usually is a bit of a pick me up after a usually below par performance.
This season.
Yeah, this season especially. But
yeah.
talking of performances, we haven't exactly been at our best of recent. Other than our draw against Chelsea 2 weeks ago, where we came from behind twice, we've not really had any standout matches. I mean, don't get me wrong, we've had some real individual standouts. I think Ollie Arblaster against Chelsea was incredible. I think in that game, according to FootMob, he had 5 chances created, which was the most in the match, an 88% passing accuracy, 2 tackles, which again was the most in the match, 2 out of 2 dribbles completed, 6 recoveries, and an overall 7.9 match rating. Now, considering he only made his full Premier League debut a few weeks prior to this against Bournemouth, I think he's really beginning to find his feet in the team. And if we are to go down, which, let's be honest, is inevitable, I think he'll be a real threat in the Championship, don't you?
Yeah, I think he's one of the assets we really need to... I know he's signed a contract in it, but that means next to nothing for Sheffield. I think it's going to be... I think even if he hadn't been that great, we'd have sort of no choice. I think it's probably something we're going to come on to. We're going to have a lot of changes. Obviously, people on loan, people contract running out. People might just be wanting to release ourselves. So we are going to have to... They're going to have to be a lot of new faces. I suppose now Arblaster isn't a new face next season, but... there's every chance he's going to be really, really vital. I think we might have to sell a couple of players. I don't know, people saying Souza and or Harmer are going to have to be sold just for financial reasons. Either way, though, but he's really going to... Not to put too much pressure on the lad, but I think there's a bit of danger that I think he's going to be a star for his next season, but I just hope the fact that, he's had a couple of really good games, but we don't get too ahead of ourselves because every chance we drop down a league, it doesn't always work, so see who we get in. Obviously, we can't just promote the entire under-23s, but fair play to him. He's hit the ground running. I think we all sort of had high hopes for him, to be fair, but I don't think we'd be seeing this much from him this early. So fair play to the lad, and hopefully we can keep him for as long as possible before we inevitably sell him off for about £2.
Just as a side note to that, since we've seen obviously Wilder come back in, there's been a renewed team spirit, I think, on the pitch, even despite results not going your way.
Definitely.
I think a lot of the youth players have come up and they've done well, and obviously Arblaster come back off loan. But someone else that impressed me quite a lot when I went to the game, Sheffield United against Liverpool, I thought Andre Brooks looked a real solid player and a versatile one at that. And I thought the job he did for the team that day was... very impressive, and obviously Wilder seems to trust him. He knows that he's a local lad. So, do you think Brooks might join Arblaster in the midfield for all homegrown academy?
Yeah, I think I remember being at Villa away, and he was pretty much one of our only, if only, outlets that day. And he looked a pretty, he's a, like I said, it once again, he's a bit of a rough diamond. He's still got a long way to go, but he's also a very young lad and very inexperienced. I remember seeing him play for the under-21s against that lot over at Hillsborough back in October, I think, and he stood out head and shoulders. In a similar way, I saw a little bit of the under-21s, 23s the other day, and when Asula plays for them, he's just head and shoulders.
Yeah, he scored a hat-trick in first half, didn't he?
And Brooks was similar. You could see that he was by far the best player on the pitch back in October. And then he had a really good debut. I don't know if it was his debut, but when he played at Villa away, obviously... Liverpool away, bit of a different prospect, but did well again. And he looks a bit of a, like I said, quite an exciting prospect. And like I said, obviously Arblaster's a bit more of a central, but whereas Brooks is a bit more of a winger. But I think they've played together for years now, literally. I think they've sort of grown up together, both local lads, both Blades fans. Victoria's goes down with the fans. And I think he could be a bit of an exciting prospect, obviously in a slightly easier league next year as well. So hopefully they both have a great summer. We bring in a bit of talent around them as well. It can't just be dependent on these two. I don't even know how old they are. I think they're both teenagers still, but we can't put everything on them, but both of them. I'd like to see them both playing regularly next season.
Definitely. I mean, in addition to this, I think Souza and Robinson against Luton a few weeks ago at Kenilworth Road, I think they were outstanding. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed your vlog on that day with Vinny Souza come and join us in the booze. I thought that was brilliant. To be honest, I think since then, Souza hasn't quite been himself. He had a go at Robinson at the Molyneux 2 weeks after that Luton game. I know they had a bit of a fallout there. And then Robinson picked up an injury of sorts against Chelsea, which put him out of the squad against Brentford last weekend. So it will be interesting to see if he features tomorrow against Burnley. We also have a few contracts ending soon, well, at the end of this season, with the likes of McBurney, Baldock, Bogle, LaRussi, to name a few. I think there's quite a few more, actually. And obviously, we've got Brereton Diaz and McAtee's loan ending. I know we've sort of briefly touched on it, but do you think our academy will be the way forward when we inevitably get relegated, or are we hoping to bring some new talent in elsewhere?
I think it's going to have to be part of it. Just we've got no say in the matter. Just the fact that, like you've mentioned, all those players that are going to be leaving, you know, by hook or by crook, whether it's a loan, contract ending, maybe we're going to have to sell them. Like I said, I'm hearing that we're going to have to sell at least one of Anel, Sousa, Harmer, if not two. Knowing us, it'll be three. But there's going to be a lot of changes. But the academy is going to have to be a part of next year's plans, but it can't be all of it. We're going to have to. I know we've got very limited funds, but we can't just promote the under-23s. Like, and people, you know, people, yeah, there's two shining examples of Arblaster and Brooks, but they're the cream of the crop, and we can't just promote the entire of that youth side. Even we are going to have to maybe just have those two, maybe one other just coming on for some sub appearances or another one maybe, but it's a very big gap between under-23s and elite men's level, senior level football, as you can see. Like with Asul is a brilliant example of that. He drops down into under-23s. He's like prime Ronaldo. Obviously, I know we are in the Prem, but don't really get a touch, to be fair. You know, it's I know that is the Premier League, but that's the gap. That is the gap between the two levels. And I said, although we have got those two Shanik, especially Arblast, that's taken this like a duck to water, we are going to have to, I don't know from where, I think Wilder's going to have to pull off some of the old magic, getting in people, you know, for free and cheap transfers here and there. I know we've got a new recruitment squad, I believe. So yeah. I think they're going to have to, you know, show us what they're made of. And we are going to have to buy people in or loan people in, because although we are going to have to promote at least some of that youth squad, they can't be the 100% of the plan.
Yeah. No, I think we've also got Daniel Jeberson coming back as well from injury, which will be quite interesting, because I know he didn't really find his feet, did he, before he kind of went onto the medical bench. But no. the reason I ask about the academy is largely due to our lack of money or funding from our owner Prince Abdullah to buy new players. Now Mr. Abdullah has been our exclusive owner since 2019, I believe, following a fallout with previous co-owner Kevin McCabe, whom he shared the club with since 2013. Prince Abdullah won his High Court ballot against Mr. McCabe to claim 50% stake in United for £5 million. Now, all things considered, do you think he's the right man for the job? I know that's quite a broad question, but...
No, same plainly because, and I think it's been said on several of the podcasts and that, but I don't think he's a lunatic. I don't think he's malicious. He's not someone like old Chancer down the road. If you look at clubs like Reading as well, they're in an absolute dire state. I think the things that he has done wrong, he seems to have been a bit too much hands-off. I don't expect him at every game, but I think it was very telling when Slav got sacked and we had the press conference for Hecky. He wasn't even in the country, I don't believe. You know, I don't know if he met with... he kept talking about, I invited Njai, thinking, well, you know, how about you go to him? You know, he invited Njai to meet him somewhere, you know, how about you go to him? So I think he's been a little bit too hands-off, bit laissez-faire in that sense. But overall, I think one of the other things that sort of warned me as well is that I think when he went on, I can't remember which one it was, but one of the times he went on Sheffield United Way, and I think he said something along the lines of, well, we only owe £2 million. We found out in the last couple of weeks he either lied or didn't know the figure. So either way, that's bad. So there's a few faux pas there, but I think overall, he's not like malicious. He's not a lunatic. He's not trying to asset strip us. But I would still say, caveat that again with, he isn't the right man to take us forward, simply because, and it's no fault of his own, he hasn't got enough money. Even by Championship standards, we aren't rich at all. Obviously, you know, we got people will say, oh, but we've had, there's many Prince defenders online that will say, oh, we've had all these years in the Prem. You go, well, you know, we had first time around, we had bottled lightning with Wilder and the lads, and that's probably never going to be repeated again in our club history. So, you know, anyway, we were just riding the wave up from League One. We were buying players on the cheap. You know, our best signings that year were like Egan and Norwood. Egan were 4 mil, Norwood, I don't know how much, but they were funded by the sale of David Brooks as well. So we probably made those two alone were probably a negative net spend just from the sale of Brooks. So we invested literally not much at all. Probably just the wages of Dean Henderson was our expenditure. Obviously, the season after, we did spend. A lot of that was pretty pony, though. I guess McBurney contributed, but Robinson, Bitpart, Freeman, a lot of the other players we signed that summer did nothing. But we didn't really spend much to get to that position. We did, I guess, some of the expenditure that's gone on since then is your McBurney, as I mentioned. Berger, who I guess, you know, helped us get up second time around. Brewster, complete waste of time. Now actually costing us points, literally. But we didn't spend that much. And once again, we dropped on with Gavin Njai. We sort of had Berger that we'd bought from our Premier League money the round before. So even last season, we didn't pump too much. And, you know, we had the loans, McAtee and Doyle, but as loans. So I just don't think that we're going to really... the reason that we've had those 3 years out of five has nothing to do with sort of... very little to do with the money. I think we've sort of dropped on with the managers at the time and also the players, whether it's having Njai or, you know, dropping on with those loans. And we just aren't going to have enough money. And we're going to have reduced revenue, obviously dropping out of the Prem. Yeah, we're going to have parachute payments, but oh, have we brought those forward into this seat? I don't know if that's possible, but obviously, you know, we should have had enough money like last, well, you know, the fact that we weren't meeting costs last season, whether it was for paying for players, paying for the undersoil heating, paying suppliers, we weren't making that. Just forget it's a football club. If this was a business, you'd be going, what's going on here? If you work in any business, you're going like, why aren't they paying your suppliers? Whether, you know, they've bought these assets from us, but they haven't paid for that. They haven't paid suppliers. They haven't paid for the heating. If it was just any other bitch, you'd go, what on earth's going on here? And they'd probably have, you know, end up in legal, well, as we sort of have in a way. And he's just, I don't know, I think we aren't going to be a sustainable Premier League club under him because he hasn't got enough money and it's evident because we've been caught out for it.
Sorry, go on, Jack.
I think one of the most difficult things with teams that come up to the Premier League, especially in recent times, is just a little bit going off what you said there. You're not going to be a sustainable Premier League club because, unfortunately, the reality of that has been in recent years that being a sustainable club in the Premier League means that you're not sustainable in the long run. And you need to have a very wealthy backer and someone that will continually, you know, support you and give you what you need. And I mean, if we look at your signings from the past, I was surprised Wilder came back this time because of the fact that, obviously, the last time he left, I mean, it might have all been paper talk, and I know there's been things said about they have a good relationship, but I mean, Wilder and big old Prince Abdullah didn't have the best of relationships. No. So, I mean, for him to come back and then obviously the January window, I think, was a difficult one for United. But, I mean, me and Mason have spoken about before. I personally think the fact that if you had Brereton Diaz for the whole season, I think the gap to safety would be a hell of a lot less, because just having a striker that scores 3 out of 4 chance or 2 out of 4 chances is better than having a striker that scores none out of none because they don't get into those positions. So yeah, Brereton Diaz has been positive, and as a whole, I think Abdullah probably isn't the right owner, but in terms of what I just said, he's not the right owner. But to find the right owner, you do have to kind of have a, you know, like you said earlier, lightning in a bottle. So,
But I mean, the question is, who is the right owner? Because he's obviously been hoping to sell the club for a number of years now. He said for the right price. I mean, however delusional, I think it's pretty delusional. I think as of August 2023, his asking price was upwards of £170 million.
I'll give him 20 quid.
Right. No, no disrespect to United.
I think he bought in for £1. So that's quite the profit on that, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I mean, £170 million compared to our actual value, which is roughly, I think, £114 million. Now, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but do you agree that his ownership is largely due to him being money hungry rather than a love for the club?
Well, sort of the fact that the reason he's like still here, or
well, yeah, just everything. Like, obviously, he's. I think he's looking for a way out because he knows that he's not. I think he knows he's not the right man for the job, and he is looking for a way out.
The thing is, I always keep hearing though that he sort of wants to stay around as like a part. Like a part owner, like not be the. I think he basically sort of, from what I'm hearing, like he said, there'll be people and all the ardent Prince defenders will be coming on going, you're talking absolute nonsense, but no one really knows what's going on, so they know as much as I do. But it's, you hear people saying about, yeah, I think he sort of wants to still have his like hand in, you know what I mean, sort of his foot in the door and basically being able to sort of have some level of ownership or, you know, some sort of share of United without. Putting all the money in. I think he sort of wants someone to come in, have majority ownership, and then put in basically all the money, but him to still be sort of around here. Now, whether that's true, that's not, I'm not sure. But what is true is the fact that he still hasn't sold us, and it's been going on for probably coming up for 2 years now. I'm not quite sure, but there was the Henry Maurice thing. We were trying to sell to a bloke that I believe is currently in jail for fraud. We tried to sell to a guy that's wanted by the SEC, which is, I think it's some sort of branch of the FBI in America, for fraud. So, and I think actually that was a fair play to the Prince, because we got like a down payment of like single figure millions. It wasn't 10 million, but we got like a he put like a deposit down that he won't get back. And I think that's probably helping keeping us afloat right now. So fair play to the Prince. Fair play to him. I think he knew what he was doing. You know, Dozy didn't try to con us. We conned him. I think Prince knew what he was doing all along. So fair play. But joking aside, it's, I've got no confidence. I know we've like hired some, like they're called Lazard or something, to try and facilitate the deal. But like I said, Stephen Bettis has come on the radio on himself and he's like, I can't believe no one's buying us. Going, well, you know, if we've got, and he listed all the reasons that were, you know, good about Sheffield, you know, the location, the history, the heritage, the fan base, the stadium, the fact, you know, we've been dipping in and out of the Prem. And you're going, well, then you go, so what is the problem then? And it probably lies above him. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know who he's approaching. I don't know if I want to know who he's approaching. You know, no one really knows what he's asking, but the fact is that no one can dispute. He tried to sell us several times and to two comment, and he still hasn't sold us. Whether that's the asking price, whether it's and or the fact that he's wanting to try and keep his foot in the door a little bit as well. So basically trying to have his cake and eat it, wanting to have the club without having to actually pay for it. I don't know what's going wrong, but he clearly wants to sell us and can't do. And that's another reason as well why not only is he not rich enough, but, you know, it's no fault of his own. The fact is that he's like thinking, oh, I'm going to be like off in a couple of months, hopefully. He's going to be thinking, what's the point? I'm not going to pump in tens of millions of pounds when in my ideal world, I'm going to be off in like 6 months. Obviously, we've got, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but you've got the EFL checks to go through. Thank God they're in place, by the way, because that's the only thing that stopped Dozy. There's like there's Bettis and flipping Abdullah about to sign on the line. And EFL going, whoa, hang about. Does Tingo Airlines exist? Let's check. So, yeah. But, no, I just think it's that this is all going on too long. He wants to sell, but I don't know what he's doing wrong, if he's asking too much, like you said. But as long as this is going on, it's just sort of keeping, I don't know, the club just sort of in limbo and it's treading water and never really going to go anywhere. We're probably just going to, at best, tread water in the Championship.
Either way, I don't think it's a good look for the club.
No.
But just on a different note, talking of finances in terms of tickets, I know I spoke to you about this yesterday briefly. I wasn't actually able to get tickets for Brentford away, despite actually being in London seeing my family due to our ticketing system. And I know I said to you, I don't agree with our ticketing system. Sheffield United released the season ticket renewal prices for the upcoming season in March of this year, whilst also driving the tagline, "It's in our blood." Now, I'm not sure what they're referring to, perhaps money, given how expensive they are. But the most expensive renewal price in the stadium will be the South Stand and John Street, or the Family Corner Stands, at £513 for adults and £321 for over 60s and disabled fans. Young adults or students are £220, and under 18s can get a season ticket for £108. And I know this will affect you because you sit on the COP, but the COP is even cheaper at £403 for adults and £99 for under 18s. But these prices actually represent a slight increase across the board compared to our current season ticket prices. Now, as I've mentioned, considering it's looking ever more likely that we will go into the Championship next year, you could say, yeah, but you'll have more games to go to, hence the higher price. But I just don't understand how you can justify paying more to watch your team play in a lower league. I don't know if I'm being silly, but it's nonsensical, well, I think.
Yeah, I guess that sort of makes sense. You are genuinely, yeah, there are more games. I don't know what it is per game, but you are... They'd just argue that, oh, you're paying less per game. That's the only argument they'd come up with. But I think what was particular... I mean, you are watching an inferior product. I think overall, though, I think United have always been pretty decent with their prices. So I've got a... I was horrified to find the other week that I've got a mate that's a season ticket holder at Elland Road. And I think he does sit in the most... is, you know, he's in the adult price category. And I think he does end up sitting in some of the most expensive seats out... They're not hospitality, but just, you know, the equivalent of our South Stand. Normal seats, but the best, most expensive view. And he was telling me that, admittedly, split over 10 payments. Thank God they had the offer for him. He's paid the best part of £800.
Jesus.
The best part of £800.
That's crazy.
And there's every chance they're going to be in the Championship next season.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah he's in... Our equivalent was probably the £513 for the South Stand? Or?
Yes, yeah.
So we're about £250 to the good over Leeds. But still,
yeah.
I think the fact that we've dipped down and, you know, it's a bit cheeky. I think what was particularly cheeky as well is the fact that, you know, they announced the season tickets and then people like myself, you know, some people are still yet to do it, but, you know, have bought the ticket, they bought the season ticket already. And then they go, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to start next season on -2 points.
Yeah, it's not a good look. It's not doing us any favours. I mean, Jack, do you have anything to add? Perhaps how it compares to Liverpool? I know obviously Liverpool's tickets are going to be way more expensive than ours, but...
Yeah, I mean, from a Liverpool perspective, getting a legitimate ticket, not secondhand, is pretty much gold dust. Most of the time you have to have a season ticket, but you have to be on a waiting list for a season ticket. I've been on a waiting list to get the opportunity to get a season ticket for 18 years. My dad signed me and him up when we was 2. We're now about 10 years away from getting the opportunity to buy a season ticket, and God knows what the prices will be by then. But I mean, you're looking at about £200 to get a ticket on resale for Liverpool. And with the waiting list, you can apply to being like a lottery draw sort of thing, but again, winning a ticket there is just very, 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 very difficult. And I think what you were saying about Sheffield United and their ticket prices is pretty damning, to be honest. Maybe it has something to do about what we previously mentioned with Abdullah, and you know, he wants to sell, but he wants to keep the books afloat. So if Abdullah leaves the club with anything minus in the bank account, it probably becomes back negative to him, whereas a potential, if he leaves it with £1 in the bank and takes off, that's a good sign for him. So
No, as I mentioned, I couldn't get tickets to the Brentford game due to only having 12,500 loyalty points. No disrespect to our older fans, but it seems that the way that our away ticket system works tend to favour the older generation who have had season tickets for longer and subsequently built up those points to be able to go. Now, for those listeners that perhaps don't know, our away tickets especially are released in increments of about 5,000, I think it is, starting at upwards of 70,000 loyalty points. Now, you can get loyalty points by purchasing merchandise and buying season tickets. And in addition to this, each time you scan your season ticket to go to a game, you receive 150 loyalty points. Now, for someone like me, who has held a season ticket for 5 years now, gone to more or less every home game and gone to the odd away game when we weren't able to sell out, I've only accumulated the 12,500 points. Now, I'm not saying I have a solution, but I think our system should be changed to cater a bit more to those with fewer points. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a hard one because I think, like with anything in life, no one's ever going to be, you're never going to please everyone. But I know there are some people that they might not have been game to years for whatever reason, but they might be on like 80, 90,000 points and that. And I think sort of one thing I've sort of like noticed myself is that I think that the best way is to keep buying your season ticket, you know, and you get that sort of 2,700 block of points at the start of the season. It really does like sort of take time, but you sort of feel like on a treadmill, because I think like a couple of years back, tickets might start, and I think it changes on the game, but tickets might have started off day one, 50,000, then it'd be day two, 45, and then you think, oh, I need to climb up, and then the next minute you go, all right, I'm now on like 30,000, you know, I'm not too far. Right, now it's starting at 60,000. Day two, 55,000. You're thinking, Christ. And then like you keep going, like now for me this season, I've just passed over into 41,000. But now you're seeing tickets, day one is 70,000. So it's just like being on a treadmill. Like you run, but you're never any actually further forward. So it's basically just, you've got to sit it out until you get to 60K and then you're fine. Or you've got to sort of do like what I do and sort of be reliant on people getting your spares and that kind of thing. But it's really quite hard. And even if you buy like one-off tickets to go far away, or you get 150 points, which is, I think, it's a drop in the ocean. It really is nothing. So I think it's hard. I think there's some clubs that do like a five-year rolling system. So you sort of, you can't just have a wealth of points and sit on it and then go, right, and then not go for 5 years. And then we get, say, I don't know, a really high profile game. Maybe it's a championship playoff final second leg, or it's away at Leeds Wednesday, or, you know, something like that. And you haven't been for 5 years, but you can get one like on first day, whereas there's like some like other fans that are going like week in, week out, Tuesday nights away at Bristol, Swansea and all that nonsense, picking up 100 points for each of those trips and then not getting a look in. So I think perhaps maybe a five-year rolling thing, and I think there's a couple of clubs that do that now. It'd be interesting to see what their fans... I'm not sure if that's what Wednesday do. I don't know. But I know like Leeds have like a flipping away season ticket. I don't know how that works. But it is really hard for people to sort of get on the ladder, to be fair. Because sort of once you've got above that 60 points... But then there's going to be more and more and more people. I guess that's why they keep pointing it up a 10,000 increment, you know, every season. And now it's, in a couple of years, it'll be right 80,000, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to go to like Leeds or Wednesday or something like that. So it is really hard. I think probably a rolling system would probably work best. You actually have to keep going to keep your points up. You can't, you know. And then the fans that are going to daft games regularly every season do get the first look in. But yeah, no, it's hard.
Also, sorry, because you may have mentioned this, but how long did you say that you've had your season ticket for?
I think the 14-15 season was the first year. So I think I had a couple of points, like through Junior Blades membership and when you bought a one-off ticket. So I had like a couple, but I think 2014-15 was my first year with a season ticket.
So you've sort of been accumulating points for 10 years now, and you've just got to 40,000. So
yeah,
that's, I mean, for me as well. That I mean, even for you as well. That's to get to that 70,000 point. That's still a long way off. If you want to be able to go to that game, as you said, you're going to have to rely on somebody else, or just by chance we don't sell out. Which I'd like to think we have a good following. We're likely to sell out most games. So it's just becoming ever more impossible to get to these games, especially, as you said, with the rising, the increments at the start of each season.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I can think of, well, we have our allocation for away games. Perhaps when it comes to buying away tickets, a larger percentage of the tickets should be offered to supporters with higher points, but slightly less offered to those with less points. So this still benefits those with more points as they have a larger percentage of the allocation, but it gives others more of a chance to go to these games. And I'm by no means going to go and pitch this to United and say, there you go, there's your solution. Now everyone's happy. But personally, I think that is quite a good alternative to ensure that everyone is able to go to the games that they want to go to. Do you have any thoughts on that kind of? I don't want to say solution, but
say if you've got like 2,000 tickets or whatever, you break off a chunk, and that's like for the
Or say under 15,000 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's slightly similar to the ballot in a way, where there's sort of a portion cordoned off just for, I don't know, is it like 10%? So if you have you'd have 2,000, you'd have 200 left, and then that just goes into like the raffle, whoever applies and that. But yeah, I guess anything that sort of comes in, I don't know, it's sort of hard. But then I guess, yeah, it's not perfect either way, to be fair. It's really hard to sort of get it right. And we're sort of too entrenched in it now for it to, if it changed, it'd be sort of chaos. But you'd always get people sort of outrage, but I'm pretty sure that whatever happened, you'd probably still get similar. The vast majority of people that go in now would probably still be the same people going still. You know, there'd be some. But I think, you know, you do see like other kids and that there, but you're thinking you must have got it through like your parents or, you know, someone that you know all spares and that. So it is a hard one. It doesn't look like it's changing anytime soon, but it will be interesting to see what they come up with if anything.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Now, just kind of changing topics again, I've sort of saved this question for last because I think it's arguably like the meatiest one. Now, we lost Heckingbottom in December of 2023, and not long after, Wilder came back home for the second time. Now, he's proved he can do it before, but is he the right man for the job long term?
Long term, no. I know we did have a good, I just think it'll blow up like it did at the end, you know, last time. You know, things started not going his way. He's already shown he's got that temperament hasn't gone, you know, quite a bit. I think he can be quite a Mardy manager. I think obviously he's very strong-willed, which I think often is to his betterment, but sometimes it gets the better of him. Hence how it ended up blowing up last time. See what's going to go on. I imagine if he gets promised all these things in the summer and they don't materialise, there's every chance he'll throw his toys out the pram. I don't think long term, no. I think if he's the manager at the start of the 25-26 season, I'll be amazed.
All right, okay. I mean, you mentioned that he's a Mardy manager. Do you think that comes from being passionate for the club, because obviously he is a boyhood blade, or do you reckon, like, where do you think that comes from?
Yeah, I think part of it is that, but he seems to get annoyed at like daft things like that, you know, that fourth official, like after the game just sat in the room having a sandwich. Like, I'm thinking, yeah, like, why just we've lost, you know, all right, if you're angry at the ref, don't be angry just because someone sat there. Gets annoyed at like daft things, or yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I think some things that's working up, and I'm thinking there are things to be annoyed about, but they aren't the right things. And yeah, I don't know. Obviously, he's been fined by the FA now for some of his comments. I think it was regarding the sandwich gate at Palace. But it's very passionate, but I think sometimes it gets the better of him a bit. I think that's where sometimes, whereas like with Hecky last season, and God knows what was happening behind the scenes. Because we saw it with Hecky, he was quite a calm, cool and collected character, and, you know, fair play to him. Sort of like the duck analogy, calm on the surface, but must have been working like the hell underneath. But then obviously towards the end, he started getting a bit like petty with a few comments here and there, and then obviously, you know, got sacked in December. But I can just sort of see the way things are going now, someone promising like Wilder the world, Wilder not getting what he's been promised, and then rightly so being annoyed, and then a new argument breaks out. But next season, I'm really quite excited for next season, because I haven't got a clue what is going to happen. But in answer to the question, I think I don't know. It all rests on this summer. I think it all rests on this summer. I know it's an easy thing to say, but the amount of players going out, we can't just put the squad in. I don't know how much we've got to spend, if we've got money to spend. We've got the threat of another 2 points coming off at any point. We'll look forward to that when that happens, no doubt, towards the end of the season when we're pushing for like
promotion push.
But while we will get annoyed with the Prince, it's happened before, it'll probably happen again. I just think it'll blow up before long, unless we hit the ground running next season, have a great season back up, then yeah. But if things start going a bit wrong, Wilder will get annoyed. Probably have another argument with the Prince over something or nothing, and that'll be that.
Yeah, I mean, Jack, I'm interested for your take on this from like an outsider's perspective. Do you think Wilder's the right man for the job?
I would really, really like to say yes. I really like Chris Wilder. I mean, from the first time Sheffield United got promoted to the Championship, and then obviously they went up to the Premier League, it was a meteoric rise. And then your first season in the Premier League, so good, and Wilder had all this pedigree. But I feel like for some reason deep down, Wilder doesn't have the belief in himself anymore. Mm. And from the interviews, like Ben was saying about obviously, you know, all the stuff that he's been saying and all the controversy. I feel like Wilder's time at Middlesbrough and Watford post Sheffield United the first time has made him a different manager, and the players sort of understand that now. I almost feel like, and any player that comes in will obviously do a check on the manager and things like that. But for the way Wilder's been acting, I completely agree. I feel like he'll get frustrated, things won't be going well, and they might still be on a right path, but two losses in a row in the Championship when you've just been relegated is more than enough for a manager to be under pressure. And if Hecky's looking for a job again, I'm sure Abdullah will give him a call.
Who knows? I'm actually going to be quite controversial here, and I'm going to say that I think he is the right man for the job. No disrespect to Hecky, because I think what he did here at United and with the promotion last year, you know, he took over from Slavisa Jokanović, like you said, Ben, last minute in November of 21. And turning that season around, I think, was unbelievable. But I think the fans relate to Wilder a bit more, and being a heavily community and family-based club, I think that's what we need. I mean, you know, he's grown up being a Blade. He used to be a ball boy. He used to play for us. And obviously, he's now on his second managerial spell here. And even if there were any doubts, he's a Blade through and through. And you can tell in the post-match interviews, as you said, if we lose, he's genuinely hurt. And whether that's him being Mardy or not, I think it comes from a place of caring for the club. And again, no discredit to Hecky, but I think not that he lacked passion, but he kind of looked a bit, I don't want to say gormless, but there was no kind of expression in the way that he was talking, whereas Wilder, he looks visibly hurt when we lose. And I think that's what we're missing. I wasn't sure if I was going to bring this one up because I don't know how relevant it is, but in terms of the topic of him being a Blade, Jack, I know I've briefly spoken to you about this, but Ben, I wanted your take on this situation. It's in terms of Wilder being like an approachable and relatable person. It was the day before the Brentford game, so it's Friday last week. I was at Sheffield train station to go to London, as I mentioned. So I come down onto platform 4, and standing in front of me is Chris with two of the backroom staff. And I kind of froze. I was kind of like a kid in a sweet shop, like just taking it all in. And I was in two minds as to whether to go and ask him for a picture or to kind of take it in from a distance as to not cause a scene, because he's probably stressed. He's got 101 things to think about with the game tomorrow. And I went with the latter, and I'm glad I did, because then McAtee, Souza and Harmer all just walked straight past me to get on the train. And then I look over my right shoulder, and then there's the rest of the squad. And if I'd have got a photo with Wilder, I think I'd have wanted a photo with everyone. So as they're getting on the train, Wilder walks past me, and he was looking past me, but I kind of nodded and said, "All right, Chris." And he returned the acknowledgement. And I'm aware I was sort of catching flies when I saw them all, but would you have done any different, as I'm seriously doubting the decision to not get a photo with him?
I'm sorry to say, I think you've made the wrong decision.
You think? Because my mom said the exact same.
Agreed. Yeah.
So I had a very similar experience. This is like one of those like video games or books where you choose. This are the two outcomes. You know, do we do this or do that? And actually see you watch someone on YouTube do the opposite to see what would have happened. So it was the day of my 18th birthday back in 2016, and we were going to get to the Sheffield tap, but it started raining, so I said, oh, we'll just nip through the station just to get a little bit of cover. And we were walking through, and my dad said, oh, hey Ben, look at this. And there's like a load of guys walking past, all in with suitcases and Sheffield like full tracksuits on. And I didn't recognise any of them. I thought, I wonder, like, because we were playing, we had Gillingham away. It's when Wildwood just joined, 2016. We're actually having a bad start. I think at this point, because this was the 3rd of September, I think we'd won one game. I think we'd beat like Oxford or something, like, you know, at home, and maybe got another draw, but having a pretty bad start. So it was before we were all like the Messiah to him. And I sort of looking at his hands, I wonder if it's like under 21s. I don't know. I don't recognise these guys. And I sort of looked around and I just thought this guy was a bit shorter than the rest, with sort of like grey hair.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, that's fucking wild. Like, and this was before we were like, Christ, that's wild. So I was like, yeah, he's like, hey, Dad, get me phone. So I was supposed to, oh, excuse me, mate. Sorry to bother you. I'm a massive Sheffield United fan and it's my birthday today. And I'm coming down to the match tomorrow. Mind if I have a photo? And he was like, oh, happy birthday, mate. Oh, yeah, cheers, you know.
Oh, brilliant.
And I had a photo with him and all that. Might have seen it on my socials a couple. I was, no. First thing, wish me, I said, oh, massive Blade, I'm at game tomorrow. It's my birthday day. Wish me happy birthday, arm around the shoulder photo. Then he said, oh, there's a couple of lads down there. And he pointed down and just, this was just before like the steps, you know, the steps up Sheffield State. And there's like that whistle stop and the Burger King. So just start, he said, oh, there's some lads down there. So there was like, there were some crap players. Like there was Chris Hussey, but there was Kieran Freeman, Banks Landell.
Oh, brilliant.
Maybe Kieran Freeman. I don't know if I said him. Fleck, I believe. Duffy. Flecky,
yeah.
I think that was it. So sort of a bit of a mismatch of like players.
Yeah.
He went, oh yeah, there's some of them down there. So I actually pointed them out to me. So I went down to them and I was like, I mean, I was, thank God I was sort of like buzzing after a while because it was like just stood in a semicircle and like football players were all like too cool. I said, oh, excuse me, lads. Massive United fan, it's my 18th birthday day. I might have to have a photo and just sort of, So I sort of got a photo with all them. And bless him, shout out to Mark Duffy, he was the only one that smiled. Like the rest of us.
Oh, really?
And they had Duffy that actually like smiling. So yeah, like in my experience, Wild will have a photo with you and then tell you to get one with the rest of the players. So
yeah,
I'm sorry.
So clearly,
I made
the wrong decision then, didn't I? I mean, Jack, you're sorry. Go on, Ben.
The times I've met him, I've met him in person twice. Really approachable, really friendly. I think from what I've heard from everyone else, it's the exact same. And I guess sort of what you're saying, he was in our shoes once.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. I mean, I think he said before, he gets, I can't remember which number bus it is, but he gets that into town, doesn't he? And it was really weird when I was standing there because you think, God, like these are some real professional footballers, like they're these big figures in my life. Like as you said, I kind of worship them. And then you kind of look at them again, you think they are just human beings at the end of the day. Like they are just like you and me. And I love them for their job. Like it's really, really surreal. I mean, Jack, you obviously said that I made the wrong decision as well. Have you experienced anything like that? Or,
well, I mean, earlier this year, when I was getting a train back home, stood on the same platform as me was Jack Robinson.
Yes, of course. I completely forgot about that.
So yeah. Jack Robinson was still on his own, and then I went over. I went, oh, you're right, Jack. I'm a Liverpool fan. Obviously, used to play for the academy. Can I have a photo? He goes, yeah, of course, lad. I'm like, yeah, sound. So obviously, I got a photo with Jack Robinson, and then in December this year, I was at the no early January. I was at the World Championship of Darts, and I was at the bar. And I look over my shoulder and there's this absolutely guy who's massive and he's wearing like a Batman suit and he takes off his mask and it's Shane Duffy. So I'd say to him, oh, you're right, Shane, can I have a photo? And then he does it in, he says, yeah, of course you can, in an Irish accent, but I'm not as good as that accent, so I'm not going to try and
don't want to butcher it. No,
probably not. No,
Oh, brilliant. No, brilliant. Just again, just to go, sorry, get back on track again. Personally, I think we are severely misunderstood as a club. If we just go back to Hecky again, at the start of this season, there was this whole spiel about Ndjai getting the number 10 shirt. And then the next thing you know, he's on a plane over to France to go and sign for Marseille. But to top it off, I think as you mentioned earlier, Ben, I think a day or two before the season kicked off this season, I think Hecky receives a picture of Sander in a Burnley training kit or a full kit. I can't remember which one it was. So he didn't even know that he was going, and then is just expected to get on with it after losing arguably two of our key players from the previous season. And not to mention the fact that Sander went to one of the other clubs that came up with us. I can't help but think people just write us off and think that we're a bad side. I've seen tweets saying that we're the worst team in Prem history, and that we don't belong in the Premier League. But as you said as well, there's always so much going on behind the scenes, like this, for example. And I dread to think what Wilder would have done or said, like throwing his toys out of the pram. It just doesn't bear thinking about. So I
No.
think Hecky put up with a lot more than.
Yeah, and I think like a lot of people on the surface will say, "Oh, look at how bad the players are," and then some people might go a bit deep and go, "Is it the management? Is it the backroom staff? Is it the board?" And I think you start going further and further back, and it's just eventually you get to the top, and that sort of lays the foundations for everything else. And if we're being run to the extent where we're dicking around with videos instead of getting people to sign contracts. Hecky's sort of finding out people have gone, and then the club are coming out and going, "Oh, well, no, we did tell him. Well, no, we tried to tell him, but we didn't. And we didn't get through to him till the morning." So basically, confirmed that he didn't know until the morning after. Players leaving late, running around, scrabbling around for like penny pinching signings here and there, whilst the season's actually started. Like the flip the ship the ship's sinking, they're trying to patch it up whilst it's already like going underwater. Like they're still, oh Jesus, on it. And the further you trace that back, it just goes back to the top. And we're gonna start next season, and loads of the massive prints argue, defenders will come out and go, "Oh, well, it's been and gone now, been and gone. Sander and Ndjai, let's stop talking about it." Okay, let's stop talking about that. Let's start talking about the fact we're starting flipping next season on -2. Because we couldn't flipping meet our payments. What, forget about what football club. Let's look at it as a business. What sort of business is that? We were struggling to make payments on the undersoil heating, struggling to pay other suppliers, couldn't make payments on players. So, yeah, let's look to the future. Let's move on from the past. Look to the future, and we're starting next season on -2. And apparently, we're going to have to sell some of our current assets to try and stay afloat despite having parachute payments. So,
And keep the floodlights on.
Jesus
Yeah,
Christ, honestly.
no, it's not good, is it? And especially because all of that happened at the start of this season, our return to the top flight in English football, arguably the best league in the world, and you're losing our star player Ndjai. It's just
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Mason earlier about the fact that Ndjai left and you started the season with three main strikers of McBurnie, Asula, and Jevison, which is just bad. And obviously Benny Traore, but I don't really know if
No.
he's a. I have no idea where Benny Traore plays, if I'm being
No, no
honest.
one knows where he
No,
plays, to be
yeah,
fair.
still asking the same question.
But when Ndjai left, it wasn't even like they didn't know. I mean, I remember there was a lot of memes going around on Instagram because Ndjai's missus was selling off all of the stuff in the house on Facebook Marketplace. And I just remember finding it hilarious, but also being like, this is a really bad indictment on the state of Sheffield
You
United.
might have been finding it funny, but I was watching that through tears, mate. That was
Yeah,
horrible.
no,
Absolutely horrible.
fair enough, yeah.
Just looking at the time, I think we are getting a bit pushed for time. So to kind of round this episode off, it's a massive game tomorrow against fellow relegation contenders Burnley. Now, we lost the first game at Turf Moor 5-0 earlier on in the season. How do you both see tomorrow panning out? Ben, I'll come to you first.
I think my score predictions are 1-1. I think it'll be a pretty rubbish game, to be fair. Neither side's shown much quality. Bit worried about us. I don't know what the state of Robinson is. I've not seen any. I don't know what they've said in the press conferences. Obviously, Bogle's out as well. I don't know if Baldock's fit to come back. So I really don't know who's going to start for us. Obviously, hopefully Arblaster and Harmer have another brilliant games. Diaz, hopefully, you know, last week was a pretty bad one for him, but hopefully that's a bit of a lesson for this one. I think both sides will score. I'm going to go 1-1. And Sander will get booed, but I won't be booing him. I don't know why the point of booing him is.
Yeah, Jack, what's your score prediction for tomorrow?
I think it'll be... I actually think Sheffield United win. I think they'll win 3-1. I think it will get off to quite a slow start, but then as soon as one goal goes in, I think the second half will be quite the thriller. We've obviously both... I mean, at this point in the season, for both sides, a draw is basically a loss. So it really makes no sense going for it. Saying that, you do have to have players to put the ball in the back of the net, so maybe I'll be left with egg on my face, but who knows?
Yeah. No, to be honest, Ben, I'm really sorry. I'm going to have to go with Jack on this one. I think it's a must win, and if there is to be any sort of a revival, then we do need to win. But I think a comfortable 2-0 victory. I think it's in order. I think it's deserved. And as well, it's funny you should say about Sander being booed. Wilder has mentioned that he's encouraging fans to give Sander a warm welcome on his trip to the lane tomorrow. Yes, it's respectful, do we want to give him any sort of confidence boost ahead of a must win for both sides?
I think it's gone past being a must win. I think both sides are down. I think all we can do is sort of bring them down with us if we win tomorrow. It's just sort of saying, yep, you're with us, you're coming down.
Yeah,
you know,
claiming them as our own.
Yeah. We're just cutting the rope for both of us. That's all we're doing if we win tomorrow. But yeah, no, I mean, I just wouldn't do anything, to be fair. I probably wouldn't clap him. Would I clap him? I don't know. We clap some players, don't we? But like, probably like...
Yeah, I won't boo him, I'll say that.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't know. I think he's probably just... That's Wilder anticipating, trying to be a bit professional, diplomatic, anticipating the fact that a lot of people really hate him for going to Burnley. I don't know. Gibbs White hasn't been back yet, has he? I don't think.
No, so I have a feeling he's going to be... Yeah,
he'll get it as well. I don't get why people hate him, to be fair.
No, I'm trying to think. Did Tommy Doyle get booed early on in the season? I don't think he started, but I think he came on as a sub.
I thought he was a bit more clapped.
Yeah. Like, no, that's what I mean. I think
he even like misplaced
positive.
The pass and people started going, he's a blade and he's a blade, because he did like, he messed up a little bit. So, I think he even came up for a Wolves corner and I think he got clapped a bit, so.
Yeah. No, it will be interesting to see.
People will boo. I'll probably just do nothing, to be fair.
Yeah, and lastly, as it's match day tomorrow, I think it's only fair to ask, what is your go-to match day pint? Now, I have a feeling I already know what yours is, Ben, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
See, the thing is, I usually go to the Beer Engine before the game.
Right.
Either the Beer Engine or last couple of times has been Triple Point. And although the Beer Engine does serve Guinness, which is like my go-to drink.
Of course.
Beer Engine, though, it always changes. So I'm always like looking at like, a craft IPA on keg, about 4.2%. So you often get something like Neep's Endalsis is a common one.
Yeah.
All sorts of like brilliant names they come up with in that. Local beers from like, I'm trying to think. What there's one called like Full Circle Repeater or something. So something like that, like a craft IPA on keg would be my go-to beer. But away from like the Beer Engine and Triple Point, definitely would be... Guinness.
Okay. Yeah. No. I mean, I look forward to seeing that in the vlog tomorrow. Jack, what's your go-to matchday pint?
I love a good Peroni on tap, but not many places have Peroni on tap. So if not that, probably a Star of Brahman.
Yeah.
Just because I'm a little bit classy. So no. But no. Probably Star of Brahman. It's lovely.
No, I think Wilder likes a Peroni, doesn't he? I think that's his go-to.
Well, yeah. I mean, me and Wilder, things in common. We're both getting sacked next year, so you know, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
No, I think I'm gonna go safe, and I'm gonna go with the Guinness, like you, Ben, because I think it's a drink and a lunch in one. So it's the best of both worlds, really, isn't it? But yeah, No, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today. Ben, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on here today, so thank you once again.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it. Anytime.
And if you wish to check out Ben's social media channels, he can be found on YouTube, Instagram and Twitter, all under the handle of Travelling Blade. Join us next time where Ross Allison will be taking you into the boardroom at Elland Road with Leeds United. But until then, you've been listening to Who's In Charge.